Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello, there's no wrestling this week.
There's not, which is why he's allowed to say all the things. Also, Josh Brown.
Oi, oi, how are you doing?
Pretty damn good. Now, I thought we'd just do a dedicated podcast to Mass Effect 2, because we're all still playing through the Legendary Edition. Yes, E3 is in like 4 days or whatever. We might do another sort of last-minute roundup type thing. But we did do that last week anyway, and we'll just see what happens. But for now, let's just talk about Mass Effect 2, because for the longest time, this was always held up as the best game in the trilogy. And I'm curious what that feel, what it's felt like going back to it. Josh, as someone who has already been through the trilogy like myself, and Benroy, you're experiencing Mass Effect for the first time. So I kind of want to start with you. How has Mass Effect 2 hit you?
What if I was like to say maybe it's one of the greatest games ever made? And
we'd say we've been telling you that for years.
Anyone who's not played it, right? I think you should play it. And I think you should play the Legendary Edition. And yeah, basically...
What's this microphone work? Are you addressing the arena?
I can't believe how good this is. And because of the rancid piece of trash, which was Mass Effect 1, how it controlled on Xbox 360.
Okay.
That's why I bounced off and I never went back, because I thought the rest of it would be that garbage. And people told me it wasn't, but by then I'd already been too ignorant enough to fast forward my life and just be like, nah, that's it.
Witcher 3 all over again.
The Witcher 3 was a lot less process here, but basically I played it. It's fantastic. I put 40 hours into it. I think 43. Mm-hmm. I wish there was more. And I think it's better than Mass Effect 3 so far, like the way it just like down to like little minutiae, like how you find missions and things like that. But I can't believe how great it feels just like going around loyalty missions, getting people along. I wish certain characters you'd get sooner. And but I can't stop gushing. I need to be directed. Ask me a specific question, Scott, because I've got my mind in so many places about this game. Excellent it is.
This is what we all felt back in like 2010, just sort of going like they. Because I think for me, the thing that hits me up front, especially now going from Mass Effect 1 straight into 2, is the tonal change. Like, I mean, the opening of Mass Effect 2 is still one of the greatest opening sequences ever. And the fact that, actually, well, we'll get specific as we go, but at the time, I don't remember that ever being talked about. I don't think it was part of the trailers or anything. We're going to go full spoilers for this podcast, but the fact that the Normandy gets destroyed, the fact that happens in the opening scene and the way that it's handled, right? See, so yeah, because I knew you going in, we kept asking you, do you know certain spoilers, do you know what the thing is with the intro, and you said that you didn't, so I was looking forward to your reaction to that. Super quick though, Josh, how have you found revisiting it as someone who always loved it back in the day anyway?
Oh, my dudes, it has aged like a fine wine. I'm not even that much of a wine man, but I assume wine ages as well as Mass Effect 2. Yeah, like, this was my favorite game for about 10 years. I still remember day having the pre-order slip back in 2010 or whenever it came out. And I never bunked off school. I never, ever did it. But at lunch, I went down into town to pick up Mass Effect 2. I was that excited about it. It made me break from being a goody two-shoes in school. That's how excited I was.
The idea of you being in school in 2011 is horrific, but carry on.
I think I was like exiting school. I think I was either in the last year of school or the first year of college. I'm pretty sure it was the last year of school. You doesn't matter. My school life isn't important here. What isn't important is that this has held up to the image that I had of it in my head. When something becomes your favorite anything, you might occasionally think you're embellishing parts of it or exaggerating parts. It's been a long time since I played Mass Effect 2. But going back to this edition, I feel like I fully agree with Benroy, because I actually hadn't played the DLC, just couldn't afford it back at the time. There was never, to my knowledge, a Game of the Year edition that rolled it all in. There might have been on the PlayStation 3, but I don't think there was in the Xbox 360.
I don't think so. I ended up buying it all separately.
Yes, exactly. So I never experienced that. So going back to the core game, getting everything out of that, I also played it for dot on 40 hours, which was extremely satisfying. Mm-hmm. To do all of the side missions, some N7 stuff that I hadn't done before, and do all of the DLC, I was just like, this is the perfect whole. And when you compare it to Mass Effect 1, which I also love, but especially Mass Effect 3, Mass Effect 3 takes away a lot of stuff that you kind of take for granted in 2, like the wealth of conversation options, the way the Normandy feels properly lived in. You know, you've got people talking about their dinner, talking about their lives. Everything feels just so lively in 2. And like Roy, I was like living in it, man. I was like, just didn't want to leave this space.
Hey, the thing that I was going to throw in was the thing that I love the most is that it nails the dark middle chapter thing. And I think that was more in vogue at the time. You had it all. If you take a whole spectrum of like the likes of Jack 2, Prince of Persia, Warrior Within, were doing dark middle chapters as like the attitude era style stuff. Like everyone had a goatee and it was just, everyone's really annoyed about everything and everyone speaks really gruffly and everything. But I think that, you know, in more traditional sci-fi stakes, it tends to be the Star Wars middle chapter. Empire is obviously the dark middle chapter, and Mass Effect 2 is their version of Empire. So to bring it all back around to, like I said, that opening sequence, the fact that when the Normandy gets blown up and the sound drops out and you realize you're looking around this whole environment where you've shared so many memories, the galaxy map is completely devastated. And like I said, the sound drops out and you're just sort of taking in the reality of what's happening. I remember that realization at the time of just being like, oh, were all the trailers a lie? Is whatever the hell's going to happen after this? I have no idea. And then seeing Shepard get recreated, stitched back together, sort of whatever, all those weird injections, all these different ways that Cerberus bring you back. And the fact that Cerberus were this little side group in the original that you could completely miss if you weren't combing the entire map. And then now they're back into the forefront and you're dealing with the elusive man and it's Martin Sheen and everything else. That stuff like absolutely blew me away. But yeah. Anyway, what was your thoughts on the intro stuff?
I mean, like, I knew nothing about this game. Like, the only thing I knew, I think I've heard like Brad Shoemaker mention the elusive man for 10 years, and that's about it. And I think I didn't even know anything about Mass Effect 1. Like, it wasn't until like one of my idiot friends goes, oh yeah, by the way, we're doing spoilers Mass Effect 1, like either Caden or Ashley dies. And I was like, the moments before I was doing it, I was like, oh yeah, thanks you. But yeah, just going into this and being on the side of Cerberus, but still, I will say it feels a bit like not fully committed. Like everyone's like, you're with Cerberus, but we're letting you on the Citadel and things like that. I guess it's the amount of goodwill you've built up with like the galaxy, and I like that. I would have liked to be a bit more conflict with the Alliance to be pushed out a bit more. Mm-hmm. But I think because I had all the DLC there, like I could do the Hackett.
Admiral Hackett's the guy that always rings you and keeps you informed about the Alliance. Yeah,
because I think he's mainly just DLC, and he's like, all right, mate, let's have a little chat and then go and save my doctor friend. And then like I felt like I was in there. I felt like Keith David was ghosting me a bit because we only got to have one chat, and then I've put him into the council, and then we didn't even get to have like cake or anything. It's just like, let's have one chat and then let's go sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's confusing, like, and I think, can I just say, every time every time we go into a game, the Citadel is different. And I get it between 1 and 2 because there's big fight, but between 2 and 3, like, come on. Like, yeah. I don't know why. I guess they feel like they need to justify it sort of thing. But
I quite like that they flesh out the Citadel. Like, the Citadel's one of my favorite areas to be in, mainly because I love cyberpunk fiction and stuff like that. And it's one of the, they do cyberpunk visuals on like Omega and stuff. And you go to various cityscapes that are kind of like that. But
mad
I love
that Omega's DLC in number 3, like, mm-hmm. I just did the Omega thing as, I guess this is DLC because I'm locked into this for like 2 hours or something like that, and it just keeps going and going. But like, yeah, go into Omega in 2, and obviously because DLC, mm-hmm. Zaid is there straight away. It's just knocking someone out, right, mate? And obviously this, it just feels weird being thrown into it. But then you get introduced to one of the greatest characters of all time, Morden.
Yeah,
just brilliant. And I've just got back to him in Mass Effect 3, and I'm just smiling, and I was like, you're in a little box. I felt like you could die. Let's just cross my toes and just like try and save you at all costs and just batter anyone that goes near you.
I do like the reality that obviously you're like a newcomer to it, but Morden still stands out to you as one of the best characters because he always has been. Like, I mean, obviously you've met Thane and everything too. But like the whole reason that Mass Effect I think stands out and has stood the test of time is the writing, especially the character writing. Like, there's immaculate world building and you can get lost in the Codex, but it is those interactions with characters like Morden.
It's weird because you say Thane and he's like a nobody to me because I was avoiding seeing Liara for the longest time because me and Miranda sort of like challenged each other. I was like, oh, I don't want to go back into, I don't want to be like, oh, how you doing? How you doing? And then have that awkward conversation and be like, you know, it feels like, I was saying to you guys, it feels like being in relationships in like school or sixth form uni. eventually go speak to her and it was fine. And we did the Shadowbroker DLC and
We just
agreed to be friends, but then now in Mass Effect 3 and like, well, yeah, maybe I love you. And then Miranda comes along as a maybe I love you as well. So I love these two women at the same time. And they just, I can't help but throw myself into this as I would as in my mindset as if everyone else playing. It's like just like, I don't know what to say, I can't come in, I'm scared.
Do love that they have written so many different responses to the way that you can approach the amount of romances that are, let's say, on the table. Because, you know, if you decide to start doing that, then the characters realize that you can have there's little showdowns in the meeting room where they'll sort of do a Yennefer and Triss and, you know, get like talk to Shepard and be like, okay, what are we doing? Which one of us are you going for? Let's actually figure this out.
Stuff of Kelly Chambers is great as well. Like,
Kelly Chambers is a divisive figure in this here chat because Mr. JB is not a fan.
Kelly Chambers is the only person on that ship I wouldn't have mind blowing out the airlock. Kelly Chambers has not held up well. And every time I spoke to her, it was like, I don't know. It was like doing something very painful. And we had this cold hostility to one another. When she was like, oh, are you going to, if I fell, would you catch me? No, Kelly. You're going straight on the bloody metallic floor. There's no chance you're getting back up.
Whereas my ship is like, yeah, I'll catch you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is like you can always go down there. I mean, I don't know if you... Do you know about the Will Bang OK memes, Mr. Benroy? Because that was a whole thing across the 2010s. That's a whole world that you'll have to Google after this. But the amount of different romances and different sort of sexual innuendo and everything else that came out of, especially in 2 when they really started leaning into it, was just such a meme. Mass Effect was like the big old shagging franchise for the vast majority of
Tally as well. Like, Tally was like, now I think we're in love. And I was like... Yeah, and then I did the Simpson Homer thing into the bushes, but I just went into like, the reactor. Like, yes, like, I really like you, but I don't know what to do. I'm just going to go away now.
I've got you. You've got too many other important calibrations to be getting on with. Josh, you finished it. So what did you think of the Shadowbroker stuff? Because you've missed that back in the day.
Yes, I saved the Shadowbroker and Arrival for after I'd finished the suicide mission. So they were the last two things I did, went back, saw Liara. And I thought Shadowbroker was so great in just how it escalates. It almost feels bigger than some of the stuff in the actual game in terms of the way the set pieces are produced. You know, you're discovering her apartment, then you're suddenly, you know, chasing down this Spectre. It was cool to see another Spectre again. I realized... Mm-hmm. how much I missed that stuff until it arrived again, because, you know, they talk a lot about the Spectres, but you rarely see them after Mass Effect 1. And even in Mass Effect 1, you only really see Saren and Nihilus and then yourself. So it was cool to see what other people were doing. And I thought the crack with Liara was really good. And it almost made me wish I had those interactions for the rest of the game, because if I have one drawback, and it's not really a drawback because of just how ambitious this game is, it's that because there are so many squad members in Mass Effect 2, a lot of the time they don't have much to say in the missions themselves, nothing unique. Often it's practically like one of them isn't even there, and that goes especially so for the DLC. But when you're confined to just Liara and one other person who doesn't talk in the Shadowbroker DLC, you're having these back and forths, and you get so much more of Shepard's personality and so much more of Liara's. And, you know, what's already there is great, but that was like an extra step up. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I always thought Liara was pretty good, like, okay, but she wasn't my favorite. I never romanced her or anything. Uh-huh. This time around, I am romancing her. So when I caught back up and we had this kind of tension, and at this point I'd noshed Garrus off and was getting it on with him, and Liara comes in and she says like, you know, you want to get back with me, but I hear you're doing more than calibrating weapons with Garrus back in the Normandy. Fantastic. And we had to go through this whole thing, and I was like, that's cool, this tension between squad members, the way we bounce off each other, the way that they're not just blindly following me anymore. I was like, that's neat. And the mission itself is really, really good. So I love that I got to experience that for the first time fresh. And I love that there were still elements in this game, not to go too much of a tangent, that I've played it a bunch of times, but I was still finding new stuff, and I was still finding new perspectives on things that I already thought I had locked down the first time. So it's like one of those games that just keeps on giving, and especially so with the Legendary Edition.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say, this is the, now the Mass Effect Relationships podcast, but when you you speak to someone as a, oh yeah, so next time I'm free, we'll do
come let me know when you've got some time.
We'll take our clothes off and do the thing. Yeah, and then like, it's just before the suicide mission. That's the only time it's free. When literally, when someone like me who would when you lose all your team crewmates at one point, the ship's pretty empty. let's wait until the suicide mission. Like, Jesus.
Don't have all the time. To bring it back to the Shadow Broker just quickly, because the thing with that, if there's any one qualm that I have with the way that the Legendary Edition handles Mass Effect 2, it's that because they give you the Lair of the Shadow Broker when Liara opens up in the story, it kind of breaks the timeline a little bit. Like, you end up going to her the first time, knowing that she's looking for the Shadow Broker, and like the mission description says that these are the details that Liara is looking for, but it's like you haven't actually had that conversation yet. And like in the original rollout of the game, obviously the game came first, Shadow Broker came months later, and it felt like this payoff to something that they'd been talking about and teasing in Mass Effect 1 even, and then in Infa 2. So I think that's one of the only qualms. I kind of wish they'd gone in a little bit more and maybe rewrote that text entry or something, because it was one of the only things that stood out. Is like, if I was going through this first time and I don't know, I kind of followed that up like specifically, then I wouldn't know as Shepard that Liara was doing this thing in her new line of work and everything else. But the location where that Shadow Broker DLC takes place is like my favorite location in the whole trilogy. Like, I mean, I know that they changed it for the Legendary Edition. I think they added more lens flares. They added like a sun in the distance or something. But even the original version was like this insane weather cloud, all these electric storms, and like the Shadow Broker's ship is full of these different like radar dishes and stuff, so he can survive, or they can survive inside this insane place. I just thought that environment was just so crazy. And as far as I know, you only meet one of that species. You can read about them in the codex.
They're in Mass Effect 3 when you go to when you go to a planet and you meet Morden again. There's a bunch of those lads wrecking shop when things go awry. But I've not spoken to another one of them.
Right. Actually, in general, how have you found, Benroy, how have you found the side missions and stuff? Like, we can talk about lowly things in a sec, but like in terms of exploration, how does it match up to 1?
I did every single thing possible in that game. And then I was a bit annoyed that when your crewmates get taken, that you do this now or you don't. And I was like, well, I don't want to finish the story and then go back and do side stuff. So that's why I left Shadow Broker stuff. Because I had heard on the Twitter machine, I'd seen people go, don't do Shadow Broker until near the end. So that also helped, because I was avoiding Liara, because I was like having my sort of like, well, while me and Brand are sort of like being friends now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, well, till death do us part, but I died, so whatever. And
so I'm part of.
Yeah. But a lot of the side stuff, man, it's just nice, and I love how it just takes you to those points in the galaxy. And I would spend hours just scanning planets as well, and just,
that's one thing I was going to ask you as someone coming in new, what do you think of the planet scanning stuff?
Love it. Give it to me forever, and I'll just play.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I mean, I wouldn't just play a game with just that, but I mean, it's the best option they've had in any of those games. It's better than the Marco stuff, like the Mako Marco. Well, I'm calling it the Marco now, so get over it, the internet. But yeah, that stuff was fine for like two missions. I was like, it's pretty like, ugh, whatever. Okay, I mean, I guess it was worse in one, but in this edition, it wasn't offensive. Mm. After a while, it was just like the same sort of bland sort of like texture, and then don't kill some monkeys or you're going to get renegade, stupid amount of renegade points.
But I feel like we completely, as a species, we completely stepped over the reality of I can't even think of its name now, but that floating missile throwing vehicle that you get in Mass Effect 2. It's only in the DLC. You get it in the Overlord DLC. I think it's in the Firewalker DLC. But that is very much them taking the chassis of the Mako and then giving it some boosters and missiles and stuff. And that should be in the conversation. Like, that thing is pretty fun to boost around it. I really enjoyed it.
I think that machine sucks ass. I think it's the worst thing maybe in this entire existence. I remember
what are you talking about?
At the time, because that was part of the season pass. That was a free DLC you got. And I remember being buzzing about it because I was a huge Mako fan. And I was like, right, I want some more exploration. I want this to come back. And then I got it, and I was like, these are the most boring missions ever. And the thing itself, what I love about the thing itself is that, you know, if you're playing on a higher difficulty or even not, like, it goes down in so few hits. I'm spitting all over myself. I'm so
life.
Angry.
Yeah.
It's got crap life. It's hard to use. I always felt like I was getting blown up and sent back to a checkpoint. And I love that in Mass Effect 3, they actually, you can talk about where that's gone to one of the crew members down in the armory, in the guy's like, oh yeah, we sent it off to get some retrofits because the armor was terrible and it was just good at all. So I like that they referenced that, but I'm pleased they got rid of it, because while it's cool to like boost around and jump around, especially in the Overlord DLC where you get like kind of hub world, I think the actual combat in it is worse than the Mako's. So for me,
yeah, 100%.
It is worse. I prefer the Mako, but like I still think that it's in the conversation. Like I think once you got used to the boosting, you're sort of like fighting it on like a vertical plane, and you're like dodging missiles in midair as you're like raining down fire from above. I just thought that was kind of cool, and I don't remember that being a thing before.
I've got a solution for the next Mass Effect game.
Go on.
So those worlds are bland and boring and crap as they were. Just have them randomly generated, or let you just shoot some probes down. Like, just give you one of the two. Because I think you could just, like, the amount of random generation we've had in games now is so impressive. You could just, like spit out a terrain about, yeah, you go, there's some monkeys, drive around them, don't run them over, it's fine. And then just shoot some probes for hours, and that's what I just want to shoot probes down. But like, I bring up one issue that I think is that not a major issue with the series, but an issue I have, like, where they kind of go, you do your decisions, right, and then they kind of go, oh yeah, and then like it makes more sense between one and two, where like, oh yeah, everyone left because you died, and then everyone's doing their own thing. But then between two and three, it's like, you went to Earth, and you haven't got anyone's number and anything like that.
It was done.
You've just got to come across them again. Like, why have I got, was his name James? I'm not using him.
James Vega.
Everyone in this galaxy, and then like you start off with Anderson, like me and Keith David destroyed the galaxy, and then that, oh no, you've got James. No, I'm not using James ever. No,
he's apparently more deep than we ever give him credit for. But
deep when he gets thrown in the pit. I don't need him.
Look, this is a conversation for the Mass Effect 3 podcast. So I have to wait and see how well Mass Effect 3 goes.
On James there.
I know, that was the thing though, like back when, you know, you had Mass Effect changing identity over time as it became more of a, like, this bro shooter thing, like especially Mass Effect 3, where they were like, it's a perfect place to start, and look at all this action, all these multiplayer. and you can hang out with James Vega. And it was just like, what are you guys doing? It got so far away from where it started. And we should touch on the loyalty mission stuff, because if you, you know, look deep enough in the conversations with Garrus and Rex in Mass Effect 1, you can find some loyalty missions, but they're not necessarily flagged as such in the UI or anything. But here you've got like the specific structure of doing a loyalty mission, getting an unlockable costume, finding out more about the character. Do you guys have any favorites you want to point out, or what's your general feeling on the way that they handle just unlocking the rest of that person, the rest of that character?
Ooh, favorites. It's hard because, like, for me, the loyalty missions are like the best content of the game. Like, yeah. That's what makes Mass Effect 2 so special, because you get a further understanding of all these people. And for the most part, they're always like really varied and really interesting. Obviously, I love teaming up with my boy Garrus to maybe get some revenge. And I thought Thane's was pretty cool. Like, I used to always not really love that one, but this time around I really appreciated more of his philosophy, more of where he's coming from. Samara's is obviously, you know, iconic because of the choice it gives you between her and Morinth towards the end. I'm just naming them all because they're all that good.
I really like Legion's one. I thought Legion's was actually pretty good for how little you get of a Legion in the game.
I wish they put Legion in earlier. Like, if there's one through line that goes through all three games, it's the conversation between organics and synthetics and the different ideas of giving yourself into technology and what that means and losing parts of yourself and everything else. What?
Sorry, a point almost escaped my mouth. I was that excited about it. I don't want to interrupt you.
You should. I was just trying to keep it in, let it out.
I just wanted to gush about Tallies. I think Tallies is my favorite. And this time around, love Tally even more. Mm. And I love how dark hers gets, you know, with what her father was doing and how to get her loyalty. You actually have to cover it up. You know, you're not allowed to tell anyone what was going on, and you have to choose her over, you know, the rest of the Quarians and the Quarian council and stuff. And I thought that was cool, a cool little wrinkle. And I wonder, Benroy, when you were going through it, did you nearly make some, not mistakes, but did you nearly lose someone's loyalty? Or was that, because well, the first time I played it, you know, when you have those infighting between the crew members, I didn't have all the Paragon or Renegade points, so I would have to choose, you know, so I would lose the loyalty. And the same with that Tally thing, where I made the wrong decision and then I was like, oh, I should have stuck with my good pal there this time around. Saved everyone and have since. But I'm wondering if, because it's your first time, did you ever maybe miss that?
I'm a Jedi, not like my father before me, but I'm a very good boy, and I was full Paragon.
You've got the high ground
all the way. Yeah, I had the high ground, and am I going to life a Tally? Yeah, sure. I don't know these people. Like, she'll sort it out eventually. And when I see, does Jack and Miranda have a fight? And also,
their stuff is so good.
Tally and Legion have a fight. Of course, I'm just going to, like, you know, simmer it down and go for the blue option and just sweat out. But no, the one time that I thought I was going to lose it was Zaid. And I was like, well, he's going to want to kill this person. So I'm just like, and this person seems like a dirtbag. And this person has caused so much pain throughout the galaxy. When you wait up, it's a fake video game, but I'm not talking about real. It's worth the lives that are there to just sacrifice to stop this guy from causing any more pain. Mm-hmm. And that's what I figured was the right thing in the game, and it worked out fine. But yeah, I never came close because I always had so much Paragon points, because I'm always like, oh yeah, I'll get your cat out of the tree, as I'm trying to save the world.
But okay, I think at some point you should go back, and if you're going to want to go back after you've done the entire trilogy, but you should go back and do a Renegade run just for the sake of the dialogue that it unlocks, the way the script is done. And the Renegade stuff is so fun.
Who did you, as we close that, who did you two run with? Like, who is your go-tos if you were to just pick the two?
It's Garrus and Liara for me.
You mean in Mass Effect 2 though?
I thought you meant like trilogy wise. Yeah, I've been just swapping between everybody, mainly because this time the trophies are making me pick people based on their powers. So it's been a lot of Morden all the time because he has Incinerate and Cryoblast, and then just swapping out the other person. So it's been like Miranda. I tried taking Jacob out because I was to say everyone, not it's not like everyone hates Jacob, but he gets held up as a bland person. And I was like, no, I'm going to give him a chance. I'm going to bring him out on these different main missions and see what he's like. And he is a bit bland. He's fine, but he doesn't really give you very much.
Jacob's powers, so I didn't need him.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But that's the thing as well, is I'm always like, oh, well, my dude has these powers, so I don't need X character. But I don't know. I start thinking I have a mix of stuff. I try and like see everybody, but it's my go-to if I can are Liara and Garrus. But in 2, I love bringing Garrus because he has the concussion blast, and I just love what that does in terms of like forcing an enemy out of cover or getting them to, you know, pull them out of cover and stuff like that. So it's like, it's whatever biotic powers I can combine. But personality wise, it's Liara and Garrus.
It's Morden and Miranda or Garrus for me, because I think Incinerate is so essential, like just to wipe out someone's armor, like you can just get rid of it instantly, and then to have Warp or Overload or the heavy concussion shot, I think they just team up perfectly. And I was trying to mix people up, but when it got to the final suicide run, I was just like, nah, Morden, Miranda, you are my guys. You are the people I need in this team, so we could just absolutely rinse these collectors and get to the end.
Actually, one thing that I think 2 first highlighted that I don't like, for me, biotic charge, as if you go down the I think it's Vanguard that gives you the biotic charge. I have the biotic charge, that's my class power. That for me is such a, not necessarily OP, but such a standout class power that I don't think any of the other individual class powers come anywhere close. Like Soldier's slow motion, there's the little tech drone that you can send out. Or you can get like tech shielding and stuff, but it's just biotic charge literally lets you close the distance, finish someone off. Maybe you can change it and do the area effect thing if you want instead, but I don't feel like they ever topped that. And so for me, it's been hard. I started as an adept. I was like, I'm going to do something else. And over time, after I went through a few fights, I was like, nah, I am missing the biotic charge. Like, I'm like longing for it. So I ended up restarting after 4 hours just so I could get the biotic charge. Which classes did you guys get? And how have you found the
Can I just jump in and say my teammates were Morden and Miranda. No, it was Grunt and it was Grunt and it was Jacob. Like everyone loves it. But Morden, Miranda, they were the ones. And as I said, Josh said, for the last mission, you need them to take down the Harbinger, like bam with the warp, bam with the fire, wipe them out, get going sort of thing. But and I think overall that would be my picks. But yeah, classes, I was forced into, I'm just going to roll into this and just jump in and take control. I accidentally did Soldier.
Taking control.
I did accidentally Soldier in 1. I think I did Quick Start. That's what you two thought. I don't know what I did, but I was pushed into being a Soldier. Didn't get to change anything apart from my name. So I just
called Did you not change it at the start of 2? Because I know you picked the wrong thing at the start of 1.
Oh yeah, I was a Vanguard in 2 and now I'm an Adept in 3.
Okay.
But the only thing I got to change in 1 was I changed my name to Roy. And then that's all really. And then I guess I'm gonna pass to you, Scott. Who did you like to play?
Well, like I said, I like the old Vanguard, but it's like, that's only because of the biotic charge. I like the idea of the slow motion soldier thing too. Josh, did you go back to what you knew and loved, or did you try something else?
I did. You know, tragically, when it came to the classes and play style, I've played it exactly how I played them back in the day. I think there's something about this. Like, Mass Effect is this massive RPG. I've played the first 2 games, especially, loads of times, and yet you always end up playing it the exact same way because it's so enjoyable. It's because it's, like, so fun, and I like being that character, like, role-playing as that character. But anyway, in terms of class, yes, it was Vanguard for the biotic charge, because I think on high difficulties, while biotic charge is quite this risk-reward thing where you can get you into the fray, it also recharges your shields. As soon as you click it, it gives you an instant shield boost. So I found that very essential when I was like low health and I was like, crap, just biotic charge to you, find some cover. I thought that was really good. And in 3, I'm continuing the Vanguard thing, though I do wish I went Adept, because I love all of
everyone says, I know the hardcore Mass Effect fans, I know that we're not necessarily, but I know that people shout out Adept a lot, that when you get that powered up, hardcore. Hardcore. It's just fun to like elevate dudes with like L1, like blast them with R1 or whatever, if you start combining those powers together. And one thing I was going to end on is the villains of the piece, like the combination of the collectors and depending on how you go, the Elusive Man. What did you think of him compared to Saren? Because I think as a trilogy, we tend to hold up Saren as the best villain in the Mass Effect trilogy. And like, I love Saren. I love going up against him. I love the conversations that come from him and the fact that you can kind of change his mind over time. But the way that they draw the thematics in, like I said, that through line conversation of organics versus synthetics and all the conversations you can have with the Elusive Man about prioritizing humanity and how that sort of reflects back on your conversations with, saving the council and stuff like that. How did you guys find the collectors in the Elusive Man? Benroy, what was your big old thoughts?
I didn't really like Saren as much, I think, because he had such a terrible boss fight at the end.
He's good for 20 hours before then.
I mean, you don't really see him for the whole game, and then he's with Liara's mum, but then when he bounces around the room, you're like, oh, I can't kill you now because I've got to kill some guys. I think the Elusive Man's great. I gave the Elusive Man the place. I was like, Screw it. I'm going to give it.
How are you this, being Paragon?
Add this giant. Well, it was. Yeah, like, you got a bit of dark, so you got to kill a few Tusken Raiders on your way. So mm-hmm. add this giant potato in the sky with all these flying men in it, and then we'll sort out later. And then I guess now that's bad because now he's like, ha-ha, I was going to screw you along and I'm getting screwed, but I'm also just beating his men up. So
you're lawing to yourself, then, right?
But yeah, I gave him the potato man, the giant potato in the sky, and I think he's the best sort of thing. I don't want to talk about anything about Mass Effect 3 because I'm not spoiling that as such.
No.
But I also like how you sort of resolve things with the Geth and Legion, and I'm just going to say I rewrote the Geth in that I didn't destroy them.
I do have one actual quick question before I move on to Josh. Benroy, what's your thoughts on the giant human Reaper baby? Because a lot of people hate that.
It's just like a Resident Evil boss. Though. It looks like that big thing out of Resident Evil 6. But before you hand it to Josh, I'm going to say, I hate how you can't use whatever weapons you want to start the game. It takes ages to get the assault rifle.
Yes.
Just to say that. I think that's stupid. I think like if they're rebuilding you, you should be able to use an assault rifle straight away. Sorry, Josh, what did you do?
Well, they opened it up for one, and then they restricted it back down for two, and yeah. they reopened it again for three. So it's not great. Josh, though, collectors, hey. Elusive man, where you at?
Yeah, I love the Elusive Man, but I wouldn't really class him as a villain in 2, not on the same level as Saren. He's just sort of like this...
Oh, I think he's a villainous nuisance. Presence.
He's a villainous presence. He's like the devil on your shoulder, but I don't think it's the same that you're constantly chasing someone down. Mm. If I have any kind of drawback from this 10 out of 10 game, I think it's that the Collectors, while good as a group, could have maybe had a figurehead. I know the Harbinger's there in a way, but you don't really interact with
he's
him
more of
in the same way that you do. Yeah, you don't really interact with him in the same way as you do Sovereign or Saren, and I would have liked someone to hunt down who's like leading them and is more of a presence in the story as opposed to the actual game. But otherwise, Elusive Man, very good. Collectors, really fun, and I love the twist that the Protheans. That blew me away when I was younger, blew me away now.
I love what you just said there, Josh, because if I was rewriting this now, Ashley or Caden, whoever survived, I would have had them be the figurehead and then you save them.
Ooh.
Like, there you go. That makes that character even more important. That would have been
a hell of a twist. That would be one hell of a way to go, because they just sort of... there's a whole...
They're just there and gone. They're on the planet, and it makes sense to take them off the planet there and turn them into the figurehead.
Yep,
I like that a lot.
I guess that's the thing, though, when the things that come across in Mass Effect 1, they're either a news report on the Galactic Radio, or maybe you get, like, one scene, like the council scene or this scene where, like, whoever you saved in Mass Effect 1 comes back on that planet for a bit. But all round... Mass Effect 2 is just brilliant. We've absolutely loving it. We'll try and do another podcast on Mass Effect 3 because I am curious just how that lands in 2021, both for people who are returning to it, having all the DLC. Like I saw creative director Mark Walters just saying like that he hopes that because everything is now available, that it just makes that ending work in a way that it couldn't do beforehand. And also they gutted all the galactic readiness stuff out of it, so you don't need to worry about any app connectivity BS or playing multiplayer to get a meter up or whatever. It should just come together the way that I guess the developers always intended to before EA kind of got their tendrils in and said, hey, can you separate Javek off and make him a paid DLC and everything? So hopefully 3 lands after the momentum of 1 and 2. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Benroy Turner.
I am the biggest...
Take your time, mate. Go on, take your time, go on.
I was just... I'm the biggest Mass Effect 2 fan in the world. Fight me. You can't fight me because we're all in lockdown, so get over it.
I will. And also Josh Brown.
See you later. Always a pleasure. Never know what's going to happen in these outros. Always good. Always surprising. Always Benroy always takes the renegade option. I always take the Paragon, I think.
I know he's Paragon the whole time till the end. Real life Benroy doing the same life choices.
Give them the space potatoes.
Till next time, we'll catch you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.